Part of this sermon is going to be a story that I heard. It's actually built around a story. I'll get to the story in just a second. Typically, you want to start off a sermon with a story, but I'm going to break the rule. There is a story that's coming. It's extremely compelling. Hold that thought. Ouch, why did you hurt me? Earlier, during the children's story, we showed a little egg. Very fragile. Relationships, very fragile. Ourselves can be very fragile. Men's ego, very fragile. It's interesting how we relate to each other and how, unfortunately, when we do in a bad way, can mess up relationships quite quickly, actually, and can damage, unfortunately, sometimes irreparably, relationships through circumstances, bad behavior, how we relate to one another. But what's interesting is we're going to talk about Jesus first, and then I'm going to share this story of somebody, how somebody badly did something that will be in contrast to Jesus, but not in a way that you would expect. When Jesus touches us, okay, whether it be from heaven through his Holy Spirit or while he was on earth, emotionally, physically, mentally, spiritually, he always had our best interest and still has our best interest in mind. It always, when he touches us in that way, it always, or the way he acts, is always promoting some sort of rightness, fairness. You know, he was always gentle in his approach. He very, very rarely reproved, you'll see in the scriptures. If you all of a sudden go, how much reproving did Jesus do? I think you'll be very, very surprised to see how little he does. And when he touches us, he heals us. When we touch him, we are healed. Interesting how that relationship, how that interaction takes place with Jesus. And since he's the model of all individuals and the model of relationships, ideally, if we allow Christ to come into us, then at least one side of the equation has the opportunity to preserve and to enhance relationships. Let's look at some scriptures. You don't have to turn to these because I'm going to go through them relatively quickly, but you can if you'd like. Matthew chapter 8, verse 3. And we're going to talk a few in Matthew 8 and 9. So if you want to open up to Matthew, you'll be able to. Then Jesus put out his hand, or I should say, could somebody read to me chapter 8, verse 2? That's right there in our bulletin. Matthew chapter 8, verse 2. Somebody with a strong voice, go ahead. Then Jesus put out his hand and touched him, saying, I am willing, be cleansed. And immediately his leprosy was cleansed. In verse 15, so he touched her hand and the fever left her, and she arose and served them. Chapter 9, verse 20. And suddenly a woman who had a flow of blood for 12 years came from behind and touched the hem of his garment. For she said to herself, if only I may touch his garment, I shall be made well. But Jesus turned around, and when he saw her, he said, be of good cheer, daughter. Your faith has made you well. And the woman was made well from that hour. Matthew chapter 9, verse 29. And he touched their eyes, saying, according to your faith, let it be to you. Matthew chapter 20, verse 34. So Jesus had compassion and touched their eyes, and immediately their eyes received sight, and they followed him. Luke chapter 8, verse 46. But Jesus said, somebody touched me, for I perceived power going out from me. Every time Jesus comes close to anybody, there's going to be some exchange that happens for the betterment of the individual that's there, or for the crowd, or all, actually. That's just the way he works. But in order for one to be able to act like that, You have to become that or have that in you. And as we know from Scripture, we are not that from birth. And we can have a tendency of acting out and getting worse as we get older, or become very set in our ways, so to speak. Conversion is the only thing that can get you out of that pattern. And reconversion, a new creation. All right, now for the story. This story is a story that came to me. I was preaching at the Onondaga Native American Church last Sabbath, and I heard this story during our Sabbath school. Here's how it went. There was a woman who was a greeter at a local church. She was dressed very modestly, always greeting with a smile and a warm handshake. Every Sabbath, she was the first person everyone touched as they entered God's house. Until one day, a woman was about to be late for church. She reached for the door. Out comes the greeter, but instead of a warm welcome, the greeter gripped this late woman's hand and squeezed it as she gestured towards the door, basically saying that you're late. The woman who was late flinched and quickly removed her hand, exclaiming, "That hurt." She said she never let that woman greet her again. That hurt. What a contrast between this greeter's touch and that of Jesus. What was the greeter's point? It's not right to be late for church. How did the greeter make her point? Through the use of force. Let's talk about that for a second. Number one, when people don't obey, the enemy, whoever they're working through, first asks politely, or can, "Would you please do this?" And then if that's not heeded, then there's a warning, "Do this or else." And if they then don't comply, then punishment is given. And then the life is threatened, and then finally, the life is taken if they do not comply. We see this demonstrated in the Bible again and again, more specifically in the book of Daniel a few times. Remember on the plain of Dura? If you do not comply to worship, you will be thrown in the oven, be burned up. We're going to give you a second chance, by the way, all right? No. And then Daniel, I'm sorry, but you worshiped during those 30 days. We're going to have to throw you in the lion's den. Now, these weren't leading up to anything. We don't see what led up to them. There was no "pretty please, will you not worship on these 30 days?" But my point is that when it comes right down to it, force is used to eliminate at its peak. In a lot of these cases, we see that civil law, let's let that enter it. We're going to bring it back around to this woman in just a second. In this case, we see civil law directing worship and then a demand to comply. Food will be removed, then imprisonment, and finally a death decree. Oh, excuse me. Let me continue on with, I'm sorry, I left one part out. Today, we see this mode of operandi, which we've seen throughout Earth's history, in certain extreme factions of Islam. Obey or, become severely punished or die. Catholic history, the Inquisition. What do you think the Inquisition was? We are going to torture you until you finally admit it, so at least when you die, you'll be saved. Or if not, you need to be wiped out because you're poisoning Europe with your ideas. And so we see that force is used within the context of Christianity or religion. And so the critics out there throw stones saying, more people have been killed through religion than any other type of government or war or whatever. You'll hear them say that. Again, in this case, we see that civil law is directing worship, then a demand to comply. In the book of Revelation, we're seeing this. In the future, this is going to happen all over again. Comply with the law of worship. No? Okay, fine. We're going to remove your food. We're going to put you in prison, and then we're going to kill you if you don't. All over worship is an interesting. Let's go back to the godly woman. What was the context of her pain? It was being late. Late to what? Late to worship. Interesting. Ironically, this woman's dress went all the way to her ankle, but she was really, at least at this moment, a wolf in sheep's clothing for that very moment. We'll cut her some slack, okay? Ironically, again, it was over worship. Be late, I'll squeeze your hand again. And shame on you for being late. Feel pain now. That's what's going on inside of this woman's mind. Is it not? Maybe. Let me ask you something. There is the letter of the law, and then there's the spirit of the law. Pharisees were really good at which one? They're really good at the letter, but they missed out on the spirit. Which commandment did this greeter break in spirit? Which one? Which one? Specifically. Which one? Huh? Which commandment of the 10 did she break in spirit? Number 6, thou shalt not kill. That's what she broke in spirit. She squeezed that girl's hand and made it hurt. She might as well just take a pin and stick it in her. Would have been a little more efficient. In contrast, when Jesus rebuked the Pharisees in public, got to understand, these are the highest authority on the face of the earth. He did it in public. He did it with tears in his voice. That's the most you'll see him reprove a group or an individual forcefully, so to speak. But he did it, as Mrs. White says, with tears in his voice. Interesting. When he reproved Mary, the harlot, he did it alone. He waited till everybody left before he had to say what he had to say to her. When the people were around her just a few minutes before that, he rebuked those people. But remember how he did it? Did he grab him by the tie and say, "Hey, Joe, do you remember when you did this the other day? Hey, Mary, did you know what you did? Hey, Sam, did you remember what you did the other day?" No. Do you remember what he did? He stooped down in the sand and started writing out their sins. And one by one, they looked and they shock and horror. They knew it was directed towards them, but the others didn't know. They saw what pertained to them and they took off running. When he rebuked Simon the leper that most likely caused this young lady to be in adultery, when he reproved him for her coming and kneeling at his feet and wiping her tears from his feet with her hair and dumping $40,000 worth of alabaster all over him, he told a story to Simon. That's how he reproved Simon. He told a story, and that story made an effect on him, and what we found out through the spirit of prophecy is it made a huge effect on him. Nicodemus, he reproved Nicodemus, but he did it in a conversational way, and it was at night. Even though Jesus didn't, choose to be there, it was Nicodemus that chose to be at night with Jesus so he wouldn't embarrass himself by talking to the master of the universe. But Jesus just basically said, "You must be born again. You, leader of Israel, don't know these things." He wasn't trying to humiliate him, but it made an impression, and it converted him. The woman at the well, again, the disciples were over there trying to figure out what in the world's going on, why he's even talking to her. He's saying, "Even the man you're with right now is not your husband." Instead of her going, "Oh, how dare you say blah, blah, blah," or "Oh," just like the people writing in the sand, she took off running as soon as he exposed her. She stuck around. She felt very comfortable with him. And he was reproving. He was also proving that he knew something He was more than who, maybe just in appearance, who he might be. Very rarely, if at all, does he rebuke. Typically not in front of anyone, and definitely without a mean spirit. And as I close this sermon, next time someone does something that we believe doesn't comply with a biblical standard or our own standards, for any of us who have this passive, aggressive, mean woman inside of us, I ask you to rethink this belief in this area and let Jesus come into your heart and heal it. Thank you.